Good morning. Today is both going to be a topic in COVID era halacha, as we normally do. It's also going to be a topic about halacha questions you never really thought you needed to ask. I was surprised when I first found this question online. And I'll be curious to hear what you think about the question. So if I'll start sharing my screen now. Frankly, this is a question that we probably should have addressed, far earlier on in this series or in this pandemic. This is a tshuva that came out from Rav Rimon. Rav Rimon puts a lot of his material online in a really accessible format on his website, Sulamot. And some of them end up getting translated into English and end up being sent around. This one did not, I think for pretty intuitive reasons. His question is as follows. Shalom Harav. Ha'im yesh ba'aya shal gezel b'zoom. Is there a problem of stealing on Zoom? L'dugma, for example. Ha'im mutar lihishtamesh b'link shal moresh shal mitzrad ha'chinuch gam litzrachim shalo shayachim l'beit ha'sefer. Apparently in Israel, schools are set up with Zoom links that are unlimited. They don't know the 40-minute cap that the sort of basic Zoom protocols have. It's very typical in American schools as well. So can a person use those links for non-school related purposes? Or is that considered stealing from Zoom or stealing from the person whose link you end up using? On one hand, this is a very basic question. As everything moved to Zoom, we ought to ask the question, can we borrow each other's Zoom links, use them without someone else's permission, distribute them? I have a school Zoom link, can I share it with all of my friends so that they have a Zoom link that they could use? On the other hand, at least the way we've been handling Zoom, it feels very basic to us that I think that those things are okay. I'm not sure. I haven't heard anyone object to the sharing of Zoom links. That hasn't been something that came up for me in my school context, work contexts. I'm curious if anyone has heard such objections. But if they're not such common objections, I understand why it may have taken a while to get to this kind of question. There also, I think, were certainly other more urgent questions that needed to be dealt with early on. This was posted relatively recently. As far as I can tell, the website doesn't preserve the dates on which these were published, but it was listed very early on the site, so I assume it's a relatively recent publication. Okay, so with that background, let's jump into the meat of the actual halacha. What is the halacha? Can we share Zoom links? There are three factors that Rav Rimon develops. I think what we'll do today, hopefully, is try to read his tshuva and refer back to primary sources as necessary. So he begins by sort of outlining, he outlines three major categories that we'll explore together. Category number one, gezel b'davar mufshat. This idea of stealing and its application to sort of abstract intangibles. And does the concept of theft apply to those items? So Rimon begins. Do you really need permission to use intangible objects in halacha? Maybe there's just no such thing. For example, he appeals to a Rambam. The Rambam says, "Ein adam makne re'ach hatapuach hazeh." You can't sell to someone the smell of an apple. Oh, tam hadvash hazeh, or the taste of honey. Oh, ein habdolach hazeh, or the appearance of this gemstone. Those aren't things that are that can be transferred. And other similar things, sort of intangible things, it's impossible to sell them or buy them. Which I put on our source sheet, which I have to switch the sharing. So we'll be doing a little bit of the back and forth in this one. A person can't sell, whether as a gift or a sale with payment, you can't sell anything but things that have substance to them, so to speak. Hard to translate the word davar sheyesh bo mamash, but it seems to be something like substantive and real. You can't sell things that aren't substantive. Aval davar sheyesh bo mamash eino nikneh. You can't acquire things that don't have that kind of substance. So therefore, the example he gives is that you can't sell the fruits of a tree. Right? You can't sell living in this house. You can't sell the consumption of these fruits of this tree. You can only sell the actual house or the actual tree, or at least some of the rights that one would have in an actual house or an actual tree. So he uses this formulation. So you could acquire an ownership stake in the tree itself vis-a-vis its fruits. But you can't just sell the consumption of fruits in the abstract. You need to sell real substantive things or purchase real substantive things.
Wait, does he not believe in intellectual property?
Okay, so I'm glad you brought up intellectual property. Intellectual property is sort of the litmus test of these kinds of issues.
Right, because there's a whole, it's contract law around intellectual property. It's not, you can't touch it, but it's, people pay billions of dollars for it. And Zoom is, Zoom or music or all that is intellectual property.
Dave, you're absolutely right. And it happens to be so that's exactly. Certainly true.
Yeah. Zoom you're paying for.
You're paying for a license to use it, but in terms of sharing, so you're paying for it. And if the license says cannot be shared or it's only,
Right.
I mean, I deal with that at work all the time. We buy a license for a person. We tell them you can't take the data that one person is using and send that out to your whole group because there are group licenses that one can buy. Things like Amazon Prime, they let you set up your whole family to use it or something. Or Netflix lets you have, your family use it. The question is, what's your family? Is it all of Fairlawn? Or, anyway.
Wow, that's such an inspirational idea. We all are one family. No, but it happens to be. So I'm glad you brought up both of those factors, both the intellectual property factor that Reverend Moon will deal with very shortly, and the question of the actual conditions applied to the Zoom links that we'll see towards the end of this piece. So those are both going to be relevant factors. This is sort of the opening gambit, right? This idea, well, there are some sources that indicate that you really can't purchase intangible. So read in this way, intangibles, yeah, you're right. This would deny the existence of intellectual property. The way halakha treats intellectual property is one of the major, is a major contemporary halakha topic, maybe contemporary as of, decades ago, but at least relatively contemporary. So with this opening gambit, after reading these sources, Ravimon continues, Yeshehi vinu midivrehem elu she'en ba'alut al dvarim mushatim. Right, that really can't, you can't own intangibles, you can't own intellectual property, as one example. And therefore, you wouldn't really need to ask permission because there's nothing to ask permission to use. It doesn't exist in the same way. But the Reverend Moon himself pushes back and on multiple grounds. The first grounds are that these sources aren't necessarily dispositive. It might not be the case that intangibles aren't subject to the notion of ownership. It might be that intangibles aren't subject to the notion of transfer. Right? I can't sell the taste of this fruit. That's not a thing that is meaningful to sell. Maybe there are other things that are intangible that you could own even if you can't transfer them. You do own the taste of the apple, but you can't actually transfer it. So it exists, it's yours. If someone took it from you or denied your ability to use it, that would be theft or damage, but they just can't transferred in the same way that normal transfers are made. So this is one way to think about this problem or to deal with these sources in a world where we believe that intangibles have a certain kind of halachic existence. Another way comes in this next paragraph. La halacha, practically speaking, poskim rabim osrim lehishtamesh belo rashut b'yitzira shel adam acher gam ka'asher midubar al yitzira mufshatet. Poskim trend to, or many poskim at least, think that a person cannot use someone else's abstract or intangible creation or intellectual property, as one example. Just to point to one example that he mentions in a footnote that we don't have to read, he just refers us to the source. And we'll go back to our source sheet very briefly for this purpose. There's a short piece here from Rav Moshe Feinstein about copying tapes. This was like a contemporary halacha of yesteryear. So it talks about a case, b'davar echad she'asa tape midivrei Torah. If a person makes a recording of some shir, some Dvar Torah, v'kotiv she'oser lasot mitape shalo od tapes, and suggests that a or declares that no one else can make a copy of his tape, then vade usser, it's definitely usser to use or usser to copy. Ki inam shava kesef, because it's valuable to you. He goes on to say that others will pay you for this tape or pay you for the right to copy the tape. So if you copy the tape yourself, you're taking away something that is money. You're taking away something of substantive monetary value. Just scrolling on to the end, and this piece itself is fascinating, and maybe we'll come back to it if you have a few extra minutes. Avala asot tape me acher mi tape echad, shalo bershut, hu iser gezel. Sort of unequivocal here that copying one tape to another without permission is theft. It's not some other prohibition. It's not some ancillary issue. It's just thieving. This is a thing that is worth money to you that you're preventing me from getting the money from. Now exactly how he gets to the issue of theft, the issue of gezel, is its own question. But just to know that this idea, this recording, which is one example I would think of intellectual property, is something that has value according to our motion, has value according to many other post-game. So on a practical level, we could say, okay, so this intangible thing called a Zoom link might also have the same value. So where do we get to this idea that they have value? What prohibitions are involved? Rimon lists several. Yesh poskim she'osrim zot mitzad iser gezel. Some say it's theft. Yesh poskim she'bisesu zot gamal ekronot nosafim kigon chukei medina v'dina d'malchuta. Some others invoke other kinds of halachic values, whether they're the values of society being able to generate their own monetary rules, chukei medina, sort of natural civil law, dina de malchuta, the law of the ruling authorities of the government. Hamavir al dat balabayit is another additional prohibition in general of just violating someone's will vis-a-vis their own property. Geneva dat, o dine nene, some other halachic factors. Misleading someone or unjustly benefiting from someone else's property. A number of issues come up in the post-game. The footnote here refers to a number of fascinating articles that flesh out some of these topics in greater detail than we'll have time for. But this is sort of a remote nod to this intellectual property issue and saying, you might say that a Zoom link is an intangible, but we treat intangibles very seriously. You could own an intangible and taking an intangible is prohibited. So lachem lemaase gam kasher medubar al dvarim ufshatim asur laadam v'shemesh b'mamon chavero lelo reshut. Zoom or a Zoom link has value, and it's an abstract, intangible thing, but nonetheless, it's prohibited to use. Or at least from this perspective, it would be prohibited to use. You can't just say, well, it's intangible, therefore it doesn't exist. Okay, that's factor number one in our conversation. We had a comment before about whether the companies that create this intellectual property, what conditions they might put on its use in their terms and conditions is something that we'll see a little bit later. Okay, just one second. Okay, factor number two. This is a factor that on his presentation he calls ze nehene, v'ze lo chaser, which literally means that one person benefits, the other person doesn't lose out. On my source sheet, I termed it what's the harm? I think that's sort of the basic idea. We'll briefly look at this Gemara and then turn back to Rav Rimon's analysis. So the Gemara deals with the question, Hadar b'chatzar chavero shalom idato, tzarech lahalut lo tzchar o ein tzarech? If I live in someone else's home, someone else's property without their permission, do I have to pay them for it? Hichidami, the Gemara asks, what are the specific circumstances? Ilema b'chatzar d'lo kaimala La agra begarva dlo abil megar. If we're dealing with a case where the property wouldn't be appropriate to live in anyway, it's not actually a home. So the idea that the owner might have rented it out to someone else isn't relevant. It's not worth anything to me to have access to it. So it doesn't harm me if anyone sleeps there. And the person wouldn't have paid anyway. He wouldn't have paid rent. He's not able to pay, or he wouldn't be the type of person who would pay rent. So nobody really benefited, because the property itself isn't really a place to live. It's not an appropriate dwelling place that wouldn't be worth money. And the owner doesn't lose out because they wouldn't have been able to rent it out to anyone else. They wouldn't have made any money from it. So that's a case of zeh lo nehene v'zeh lo chaser. The renter, so to speak, didn't really benefit. And the owner didn't really lose out on any value that he would have gotten from his property. The flip side of the case, another case that the Gemara deals with, Avid Lemegar, if you have a case where the property would be worth something if you rented it out, and I would have been a person who would have paid for it or would have rented it out, then Zenanev Zachaser, while I'm living there, number one, I could pay for it. I'm benefiting from a valuable property. And the owner is losing out on his ability to rent out the property to someone else. And under those circumstances, the Gemara seems to assume that I would be, of course, I'd be obligated to pay. Now, the middle case is the case that we're going to deal with. Zeh nana v'zeh lo chaser. Lo tzricha, says the Gemara, v'chaser de lo kaima la'agra v'garva de'avid le'megar. It's a property that wouldn't have been fit to go on the market, right? You wouldn't have been able to rent it out to someone else. But I am in a position and I would have paid to live here or to rent here. So the question is, my, what's the halacha? And the Gemara articulates both sides of the halacha, I think, pretty clearly. Matzi amrle, my chaser ticha. Can the person who rented out the house say to the owner of the house, or the person who chose to dwell in the house, say to the owner of the house, I didn't cause you any harm. I've been living here. You didn't notice. You wouldn't have been able to sell it if you tried, or rent it out if you tried. So no harm to you. What do I owe you? That's one hand of the equation. The other hand of the equation, Odilma, Matzi Amar, ha it hanates. The other guy can say, look, like you took this thing that is worth something to you. You benefited from it. When you benefit from someone else's property, you owe them money. Those are the two sides of the coin. On the one hand, the owner didn't lose anything, but on the other hand, the consumer got something, and it's appropriate for a consumer to pay when they, you know, gain or benefit in some way. So the Gemara there in Masechet Bava Kamma goes back and forth and raises some proofs in both directions. But the practical conclusion of that sugya seems to be, zeh nana v'zeh lo chaser, pater. If I benefit from someone else's property, it doesn't cost them anything, but I benefit from it, I don't owe them money. I'm pater. I'm exempt from any payment. If I damage something, obviously I would have to pay, but if I just benefited, I wouldn't have to pay for that. And that's brought another Shulchan Aruch that we won't spend that much time on now. Okay, so turning back to Rav Rimon, it seems that sharing a Zoom link would be a perfect example of this kind of thing. If I'm not using my Zoom link right now, and someone else is, so I'm not being harmed, and he's benefiting, so he should be pater. So he raises that issue. He says, "Hagmar b'mesachet b'vakama omeret zenan v'zelo chaser pater." Kalomar, kasher adam nehenem erechush al chavero. When a person benefits from my property, avol chavero enenu mafsid bikach klum, but I don't lose anything out. Then pater hanehenem yilishalim. So therefore, that person is pater from having to pay for it. Should be no problem of their using it. And so essentially, that seems to solve the Zoom problem. The Rav Rimon raises two potentially complicating factors. Ones that I'm not sure really are applicable on Zoom, but we'll see. Just moving my screen so I can see everything. Okay. Ulam kedel hisha ein alikaron zet sarich ledok shnei dvarim. If we want to rely on this leniency, we have to determine two other factors. Number one, im haba'alim chasar v'afilu ma'at. The halacha of zeh nana v'zeh lo chaser, that you could benefit from my property without having to pay, is only applicable when I don't lose out anything. However, right, mi divrei ha-gemara sham ola she im nigarem ba'alim afilu chasron muat asur la chavero lehenot mirochusho. It must be anything, you're not allowed to do it. Hatosvot af sovrim she kasher nigarem chasron muat. Tosvot even think that if I'm caused any harm, ha'adam hanan etzorach l'shalem lo ala chasron she nigram ela al et kol hana. Meaning, I would have to pay not only for the small amount of harm that was caused, I have to pay for the whole value. The implicit assumption of zeh nana v'zeh lo chaser is that I'm not harmed by it. So of course I will allow you to do this and it doesn't hurt me, it benefits you, great. However, if it harms me, I wouldn't agree to let you do it. And then when you do it anyway, you should owe me the full value of that, of the benefit that you got, because it's not something that I'm happy to sort of give you. So therefore, this reality question that we have to answer in the context of Zoom, lachin b'mokresh lanu chova ledok im ba'alim chaser. Does the owner lose out in some way when their Zoom is used? Kolomar, ha'im yesh hagbala b'rishayon ha'mosad l'kamot mishtamshim. is there a limitation, for example, on the number of people who could use a Zoom link? Or maybe the school that creates, that owns the Zoom link is going to have to pay more if you use that Zoom link for non-school purposes. Furthermore, or maybe the school doesn't lose out, but maybe the company Zoom loses out. So there are all these areas where it's possible that someone is losing out by my benefiting from the Zoom link. And that question is going to be one of the relevant questions. Mr. Bear, says Rav Mimon, Shakivan Shachavrat Zoom, Mocharat Rishayon, Lohag Balat Zman, Vatashlum Shalamosad Lachavra, Hutashlum Kavua, the low Kesher Rishimush Befoal, in Beayamitadze. Practically speaking, Zoom doesn't sell the number of minutes they are on a Zoom call. Zoom sells you these licenses. If I never use them, or if I use them all the time, or if I use them for whatever purpose I use them, Zoom doesn't lose out. So they're not at a loss. Presumably, a school similarly. Once you have the Zoom accounts, they're not paying more if you use them for personal use outside of the classroom or outside of school context. And so it doesn't seem like there should be a problem of sort of causing any harm to the owner of this intangible that we decided that it's important to avoid causing harm. As a reality question, if the rules of Zoom changed or if some other company where the rules were less clear were relevant, that would be another question. One other aspect here that we might raise is that, well, maybe I'm causing some amount of harm by not buying my own Zoom link. That probably goes closer to the intellectual property discussion than it does to this discussion. But you might argue that if you're causing harm to the company by not paying yourself for your own unlimited Zoom license, then that could potentially be an example of this. But again, I don't think that would be a Zanehnev Zelo Chaser problem.
How about,
so much as a broader intellectual property one. Yeah.
How about if you're company has a policy that says your Zoom link for the company should only be used for company business. You're violating your company rule, but is that a halachic issue?
Yeah, so again, we'll jump to this. I'll make sure we get to this by the end, right? There is this discussion of the principles or the sort of explicit conditions that are issued here. But it also becomes relevant immediately in this next section, where the second factor that everyone raises to complicate the oh, I'm benefiting and you're not being harmed, so it doesn't matter. But im yodim she'ba'alim lo maskim, if you know that the owners of the property that you're benefiting from don't agree, then the correct hazeb of adai yesh eser. Of course, there's a prohibition there. So he cites a tosfot, for example, that we won't see inside. Aval hatosfot kotvim she'im ha'ba'alim lo marsha la'adam acher lishtamesh b'nechas shelo. If someone does not give you permission to use it, you're definitely not allowed to do so. And Tosafot goes further and he says, even if they don't say explicitly in their conditions, don't use this for non-company business, it might be that even just knowing that they would not want you to do it would itself be a problem. Even if they didn't explicitly tell you not to do it, but if you would ask them, you know what the answer would be, then it would also be prohibited. That may also be a problem, depending on the company. I haven't seen that in any of the Zoom contexts in which I've operated. Again, schools or other work where someone's been, you know, very mocked but not to use the account for other purposes, especially because if you ask the school, well, it doesn't cost them anything to give that benefit to you, nor does it cost them anything vis-a-vis Zoom, so... I haven't seen that as a real practical limitation. I could imagine a world where it might be. There's one other factor that he raises here in this discussion. Yish machloket im mutar lechatchila lehishtamish b'chatzar chaveru shlo midato. Right, the language of the Gemara was zeh lo chaser puter. If I benefit and you don't lose out, then I'm exempt from paying. That doesn't necessarily mean I'm allowed to do it. There are things that I'm not allowed to do for which I don't have to pay if I do them or if I'm caught doing them, but that is still prohibited. So he quotes, for example, a position of the Amshul Shlomo, who's an early Acharon. The Amshul Shlomo says, "Hasover she'aser lishtamish lo rishut mimnei she'shoal shlomidat hu gazlan." He draws from another halachic paradigm called shoal shlomidat. Right? If I borrow something from you with your permission, obviously I'm not going to pay you for it, because that's what borrowing is and that's what borrowing means. But if I borrow something from you without your permission, with the intention of returning it, that's prohibited. Even though I'm not causing you any harm, in theory, that's the idea behind borrowing. I'm going to borrow your, I don't know, hammer some nails, return the hammer to you. But the paradigm that he cites says, no, you're not allowed to do that. That kind of borrowing is actually considered theft. So it's possible that that factor would be relevant here as well. Even if you're not going to have to pay if you benefit from someone else's Zoom property, maybe it would still be problematic. However, meaning that's a solid question that Rav Rimon raises. Lemaaseh, therefore, practically, kivan shelo baror she'ikaron zeh shel zeh nein hazeh lo chaser matir lishtamesh, because we don't know for sure that this is going to be a solid heter, whether it's because the owners of the Zoom link might not agree to let us use it. I'll note also, I haven't been specific about this because Rav Rimon isn't specific about this either. I'm not sure who the owners of the Zoom link are, right? I don't know if we're looking for Zoom's permission or for the school's permission, or both, perhaps. I would think the school's, but it's not 100% obvious to me. So whether it's because of that factor, we need someone's permission, or based on the factor of, well, maybe it's not permitted to rely on Zenen of Zelo Chaser, Lechavchila, even if you wouldn't have to pay for it if you did it. So that's not the basis for his Heter. He does end up relying on a third factor that we'll see. Siba acheret sheyicholah lehatir hashimush b'zoom, ki shemidubar ulai al davar sheanashim regilim limchol alav. There are certain things that people will typically waive. Meaning, there are certain kinds of property or certain kinds of loss that I'm okay if you do, really. It's not really a big deal. So, just use an example. I think in a Beit Midrash, people are often very comfortable, if they see someone else's sefer that they want to take a peek at on someone else's table, so they'll feel comfortable generally opening it and flipping through it with the presumption of people at Beit Midrash are generally okay with you doing that. They're not okay with you moving the sefer around, taking it home with you, but if you, open it at their table and you read it, people are generally fine with that. And therefore, one is allowed to do so. So you might say the same thing about Zoom. In kein yitachin sheshimush betochin Zoom b'sha'ot she'enam miyuadot l'shiurim b'beit ha'sefer kalul b'heter zeh. Obviously, if the Zoom link is needed for school, then people would not allow you to use it. But if it's between classes, it's not as big a deal, then it seems like people wouldn't be as worked up about that. So in justifying this, he cites a Yerushalmi, a piece in the Shulchan Aruch, that just sort of just justify this idea. If people are typically mochel on something, you could use it. Ikarun zeh nachon bein b'davar virtuali u'bein b'davar mamashi. That applies to physical things or intangible things. Then he notes that the Yerushalmi that he cited, which I couldn't find inside, but I'm going to try to go back to it after the shiur. There is still a extent to which struggling to translate midat chasidut. I'd say it's certainly preferable or benefit, spiritually appropriate to not rely on this, to not take things, even if people would be mochel on them without asking them. But Rav Rimon thinks that doesn't apply here. Ach sham medubar, the case where there's a preference not to rely on this, not to rely on the idea that people will sort of implicitly give you permission to use these things, that only applies, in a case. Ach sham medubar al misha lokeach mehad geder shal chavero chatichat kitana. You're passing someone's fence. There's a little splinter of wood sticking out. So you sort of take off the splinter and use it for some purpose. The kayam chashash im kulam yinagukach lo tishar geder v'abalim. So the reason to be more stringent there and to not rely on this heter, even if people would probably be mochel, is that, well, if everyone did it, then harm would be caused. If everyone took off a splinter from a fence, well, then there's not going to be a fence left by the end. This sort of reminds me of some of the midrashim that we might be familiar with about what it was like to be in Sdom, where in Sdom, everyone would steal, less than a pruta, less than the minimum value of halachic significance. Each individual theft doesn't cause any harm, but collectively does cause a certain amount of harm. And so maybe you shouldn't rely on this implicit mechila, this implicit idea that people will allow you and give you permission to use certain things in general. However, aval b'mikreshel shibush b'zoom, mistaber shelo shayach shikul zeh. That's not really applicable in Zoom because I'm using the Zoom link. You'll use the Zoom link next. You'll use it for class later on. There's no long-term harm that's caused by my using the Zoom link. Now, you could raise a question, and this would be an appropriate question to raise. Well, if, let's say, everyone is using some one person's Zoom link, it could happen that the person who owns the Zoom link will want to use it at a time when someone else is using it, and that could be a problem. But that's already, first of all, I think probably a little bit of a far reach. Also, the owner of a Zoom link will often be in a position to kick out anyone else from their meeting anyway. We also might be dealing with the case of one person who works at a school using his own Zoom link for non-school purposes, in which case the idea that someone else is using it and going to take up school time won't be applicable. So for all these reasons, it doesn't seem like the strongest analogy, the strongest case where you would need to, or at least where one would want to rely on this mitzvah chassidut to have this sort of higher aspirational level of living. Okay, so we went through a number of factors, and we did so pretty quickly. So just to briefly recap, Rabbi Mohan, in dealing with this question of, let's say, using a teacher's Zoom link, which has unlimited usage, not the standard 40-minute cap, is one allowed to do so with permission, without permission, under what circumstances? And Rabbi Mohan raises three major halachic factors to weigh in our analysis. Number one, he raises the factor of intangibles and whether intangibles are subject to any of the rules of theft or borrowing or ownership at all. Rabbi Mohan seems to conclude, along with many poskim, that intangibles do have halachic significance. Stealing intangibles is considered theft. And therefore, we have to find a way to justify using someone else's Zoom link, because even though it's an intangible, it's still something that is real and exists. Factor number one. Factor number two in his analysis is this idea of zeh ne'eneh v'zeh lo chaser, my benefiting without causing harm or without costing the person who from whom I'm benefiting. And that while that seems initially to be a promising avenue, right, no one's getting, no one is suffering any loss when I use their Zoom link, nonetheless, there are certain limitations on that principle. Maybe you can't rely on it lechachila, maybe I can't do it if I know that the owner would object to my doing so. And so that doesn't seem to be the basis of a justifiable hater. And the third factor he raises, which it sounds like he is persuaded by, is that people are generally mochel, this kind of thing. You could rely on the fact that people will generally allow you to use their Zoom link. It doesn't cause any harm to them. Or at least if it's the case that a person would be mochel and wouldn't be bothered, then one would be allowed to use their Zoom link under those circumstances. Now to see his practical conclusion. Let's see, kum. Right. Puskim, on the one hand, are generally pretty strict not to allow you to use intangibles of other people. Similarly, maybe you can't rely on the idea of the second factor he raised. And even if you could, v'gamim kain, maybe you wouldn't be allowed to do so lechachila, just you wouldn't putter if you did so. On the other hand, there's no prohibition of using something that people will typically be mochel on. To use a teacher's Zoom link when they're not teaching, when school hours aren't operational, should be included, klulim beheterze, are included in this leniency. Lemaase, practically, and you might notice how many of these sections begin with lemaase or lehalacha. It's an interesting feature of his writing where sort of he, you know, notes different opinions and says, okay, so practically what do we do with this? Here's the conclusion for our purposes. It's an interesting stylistic observation. So practically, chavrat hazum kiblat tashlum klali k'neged kamut mizuyam shal kishurim. The company, Zoom, got a certain payment for a certain amount of Zoom links or Zoom rooms. In exchange, and in exchange, they let you use these Zoom rooms all day long. When you look at the conditions on Zoom's website, there's no mention of the fact that this permission is only limited to school hours or the school day. The adirava, in fact, it's the opposite. When you look at the terms and conditions which someone had to do in order to write this tshuva, which is very impressive. Nir'eh shehem me'ashrim shimush bezum gam letzrachim pratiyim. It sounds like you're going to be allowed to use Zoom even for private matters. Uvitznai shebala kishur mishatif b'mifkash. As long as the owner of the Zoom link is actually in the meeting. So it seems like the condition here that he's raising, which we haven't seen explicitly addressed yet, is that there might be a difference between my giving my Zoom link to someone else and my using my own Zoom link for all sorts of other purposes. Velo moser et hakishur l'chaveran. I can't give it to someone else for their purposes. Amanat she'yargenu la'asma mifkashei Zoom, to make their own Zoom meetings. Ukfi she'mudgash b'tanaim shel chavrat ha-Zoom, according to the conditions that they mentioned. Lo'or zot, in light of these facts, in makom l'chashash shel gezel o pigiyat ga acharet b'chavrat Zoom b'mikrash shel shimush prati v'kishur, there's no problem, there's no harm in using a Zoom link for these purposes. You're not harming Zoom in any way. Im zot, however, with a caveat, im maklitim et ha-mifkash, if you record the meeting, yesh levadash ha-haklata nishmeret ba'anan ha-prati v'lo ba'anan shel Zoom, ki yesh lekach hashpa'a al tfizat ha-makom ba'anan. If you record a Zoom meeting, it is appropriate to download it and preserve it on your own device and not put it on the cloud. I'm loving this this language here. Not to put it on Zoom's, you know, cloud or Zoom's website, because you're taking up their own storage space or their own data space. Now, we can just go back and do our whole analysis again. Is there any problem with my using Zoom's cloud or Zoom's data? Right? Assuming it's not going to harm them because they have plenty of data available. You know, their cloud is probably very large, much larger than my storage capacity on my laptop. So you can probably go through the whole analysis again to figure out if that's a problem. Rabbi Moon says simply that he thinks that it is a problem and isn't ideal. So I'm glad he's dealing with this factor now that I alluded to earlier, right? Who are the possible owners? So there's a relationship we have to the company. There's also a relationship we have to our own Zoom providers, our schools or government bureaus, whoever it is that's providing us with the Zoom links. But Ruhun says, no, there's no real concern that I'm, you know, harming my school, let's say, by using my Zoom link outside of classes. Doesn't harm anyone at the school, doesn't interrupt learning. And per his earlier hatter, they might be mochel, they will waive their right and allow you to use it. When people aren't particular about using them, they're likely to be mochel, then one is allowed to use Zoom under those circumstances. And again, in this situation, he says, even the minat chasidut, this idea of not taking advantage of this implicit mechila, isn't going to be applicable because no one is harmed in the long term. Even if everyone were to rely on this heter, no one would be harmed. And so Rabbi Moon concludes on a permissive note. So again, as I mentioned at the beginning, sort of a question that, you know, wouldn't have occurred to me to even ask. Once it was asked, it's a very interesting question that needs to be answered. And Rabbi Moon does so in a relatively clear fashion. And one also that I was, you know, surprised to only see discussed explicitly at this point. Maybe it's been discussed earlier in ways I haven't seen it. I'd be happy to see if I missed anything. Okay, I'll stop the recording, but I'll happily stay on for any questions.